Hi, everyone. What we're going to discuss today, we're calling it unexpected visitors that we meet or encounter in the Machzor. That's what our topic is. And the reality is, there are many phenomena that we have in the Machzor that when you look at them at first, we wonder, what are they teaching us? I'll give you a simple example. I grew up on a farm, many of you know that, in the cattle business. So what happened was you could always tell in the public school where we went to whose father or mother worked in the factory and whose father worked on the farm. Because the guys whose parents worked in the factory, they didn't have to be home to milk cows. They could be on the sports teams. Our sports team was milking the cows, feeding the cows, and cleaning up after the cows, which of course was always the best part. So what happened? My brother and I, we used to fight all the time, right? He liked the heavy metal stuff, you know, the Led Zeppelin, the Pink Floyd. I liked the country, Loretta Lynn, Merle Haggard, the Conway Twitty. So we'd always be fighting who would control the radio. We had a herdsman. His name was Billy Bordway, Mr. Bordway, a character. You know, why do you say Unser Chevre? He was a character. He used to say, look, folks, he says, I know you're Jewish. I'm a Methodist, okay? So nothing personal. But he said, the cows are not listening to the heavy metal. The cows are not listening to Conway Twitty and Merle Haggard. The cows are listening to Ramblin' Lou. Who's Ramblin' Lou? He had his own radio station. And what would they play that time of evening for the people who came home from work? Hail Mary, Mother of Grace, in this cadence, in this chanting, they would just repeat for literally minutes at a time, Hail Mary, Mother of Grace. Why'd he do that? Because it put the cows at ease, so to speak. They produced a lot more milk to Hail Mary than they did to country or to the heavy metal. Why am I bringing that up? What have we been doing for the last week and a half? What will we be doing for the next 2 weeks? Slichos. Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum v'chanun, erech apayim v'rav chesedim. Right? We keep saying it. But you know, we don't just say it once. This morning, 4 times. Yesterday, 4 times. Tomorrow, 4 times. And by the way, Aseres Yemei Tshuva, 7, 8 times. Yom Kippur, 25 times. Now we have something that we're all familiar with, and that is that in davening, it's usher, it's not just that it's a davar maguna. You can't repeat a noun referring to the Ribono Sha'olam. You can't repeat a pronoun. The Gemara says, mechsi kishtei reshuyos. It looks like, you know, it's you're talking to multiple gods. So why are we repeating the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim? Why do we keep saying it again and again and again? Ribono Sha'olam heard you the first time. What is that? That's question one. Question number two. There's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Yud Zayin Amud Beis. And you're familiar with this Gemara because Rashi brings a part of this Gemara into his Perush on the Chumash. And it says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LaMoshe. The Almighty says to Moshe, when the Jewish people are chotim, when the Jewish people sin, Ya'asu lefanai kaseder hazeh, the Jewish people should do the following, Va'ani mochalem, and I will forgive them. So we have a problem with what the Catholics do with Hail Marys. You know, you could be a philanderer, you could be a criminal, you could be someone who's dishonest in business, but you say you're 10 Hail Marys, you say you're 50 Hail Marys, Mother of Grace, you give alms, I'll call machulach, everything's forgiven, right? What is this? Is that what the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim are? Is it any different, God forbid, than the Hail Mary? So the Panim Yafos, it was the Rebbe of the Chasam Sofer, the Shalah HaKadosh, others, but they say it explicitly, Anet Gemara and Yud Zayin Amud Beis. What should the Gemara have said? If my question was correct, which it's not, but if my question was correct, it should have said, when the Jewish people sin, kasher b'nei Yisrael chotim lefanai, yomru lefanai, what should they do? They should say before me the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. It doesn't say yomru. What does it say? Ya'asu. It's a strange verb. What do you mean? We're not acting when we say, we're saying the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. No, what's the point? What's the point of the Gemara? And what's the point of us again and again repeating ourselves? You know what the point is? When we say Hashem, Hashem, kel rachem v'chanun, what are we doing? We're looking at the actions of the Ribono Sha'olam, to embed it in us again and again and again. We're trying to internalize those values. The Ribono Shel Olam is Erech HaPayim. The Almighty has waited almost 2 millennia for the Jewish people, for us to get our act together, for us as a nation to perfect ourselves. If God can wait 2,000 years, we have to learn to be a little tolerant and a little patient with others. Rachum. We're not just saying, it doesn't say Yomru Ya'asu Lefanai. We become sympathetic people. I may not be able to put myself in your shoes, but I have to at least try to feel your pain. What's chanun? Mahu chanun afata chanun, the famous principle of halachta bidrachav, imitatio dei, to walk in the ways, to imitate and to duplicate the actions of the Almighty. If I can put myself in your shoes, then I have an obligation. Not to be an achzar, to be someone who's insensitive, distant from you, but to put myself in your shoes. That's chanun. It's called empathy as opposed to sympathy. What do we do? Ya'asu lefanai. The reason we repeat it again and again is not because it's some mystical incantation. That's not what the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim are. These are principles of how a Jew conducts herself, how a Jew conducts himself. And we say it again and again, and we think about that, and we try to transform our personalities. And if you're a Sephardi, you start doing this when? Rosh Chodesh Elul. It's a din in Elul. If you're an Ashkenazi, so the reason we do a minimum of 4 days before the Aseret Yemei Teshuva is because certain days, are holidays. They're days that people didn't fast necessarily. Rosh Hashanah, Shabbat Shuva. So we back up because the original minhag was not only to say the Slichas, but also to fast during those days. So it's not a din in Elul, it's a din in Aseret Yemei Teshuva. But either way, whether one's a Sephardi or an Ashkenazi, we become different people. And by the way, I just want to make a comment. Very important. It's not just applicable to the machzor, it's applicable all year long. There's this concept called the Midas HaRachamim. What does that mean? We always translate the attribute of mercy. What does the Midas HaRachamim mean? What? God, don't use objective justice with it. So don't use the Midas HaDin, use Midas HaRachamim. Wait a second. If it was a human judge, okay? Let's say, God forbid, I'm a criminal. But my grandfather was a very pious person. And my grandfather looked after that judge. That judge was an orphan and paid for his education and was a father figure. And that judge went to law school because of my grandfather. Now I'm a criminal and I come in front of that judge. He's going to have Rachmanis on me because my last name is Schwartz or Weil or Cohn or whatever. That's a perversion of justice. What? Because Avram and Sarah were our patriarchs and we're criminals? Therefore, God should pervert justice? Chas v'shalom. That's not what we wouldn't respect that in a human judge. That's not what we're asking the Ribono Shel Olam. What's the Midas HaRachamim mean? And this is crucial. Midas HaDin is this, and I'll use an analogy, because let's use an analogy. Let's say you buy a stereo system, and the stereo system does not work. You have two choices. You're not interested in having a defunct stereo system. It's not aesthetically beautiful. You're not going to have it in your house. If it doesn't work, you're going to either one of two things. You're either going to throw it out because it's garbage. It has no value. Or you're going to repair it, restore it so that it becomes a functional stereo. Right? Those are two options. Midas HaDin means, using the analogy of the stereo system to the Nimshal to us, if we don't function, the Ribono Shel Olam gave us talents, gave us an IQ, gave us time, gave us abilities, gave us a community. If we pervert and corrupt ourselves, if we're dysfunctional, Midas HaDin means we have to be removed. Because we failed to live up to who we were. We failed to function. We failed to conduct ourselves as human beings, as Jews. What's the Midas HaRachamim? We come before the Ribono Shel Olam with a plan. With a plan, with a system of how to repair, how to correct, how to perfect ourselves. This coming year, instead of me having anger issues and being violent with people, this coming year, instead of me being lazy, instead of me being dishonest, what I'm going to do is, if I could, God, if you could help me, with exposure to this one, with opportunities here, I'm going to take those opportunities, I'm going to correct, and like we would repair the stereo system. So I'm going to repair myself. I'm going to enable myself to be your partner, to live up to my potential, to take the blessings you gave me and make this place a better world, and make my people a better people. Whatever unique, distinct blessings that I have, whatever talents that I have, I'm going to employ and utilize them. That's midas harachamim. It's not that you should forgive me because I'm Avram and Sarah's descendant. What's the whole schus av? Actually, it's called, the Gemara refers to it as bris avos. When I look at Avram and Sarah and I look at their lives, they're role models. They're a poster child for that I can strive and I can try to use them as a role model for how I should conduct myself, how I should relate to the world, how I should relate to God. That's the blessing of Avram and Sarah. And what's the midas harachamim? And we, by internalizing and employing the yud gimel midas harachamim, we become people who are different people. I'm not, to quote the Rambam, eini oso ish. I'm not that person, but I'm acher. I'm a different person. I was jealous last year. I've become less jealous. I was lazy. I've become diligent. I was insensitive and callous. I've become a more sensitive soul. I was uneducated. I wasn't diligent about my education. I've become a more learned Jew, a more deep and sensitive and thoughtful Jew, etc., etc. That's the midas harachamim. And what are what we call the yud gimel midas harachamim? It's internalizing those values, those actions of God. If we don't know what God is, we're human beings, we have a frail, limited intellect, but we look at the actions of the Almighty, and we say those actions, if it would be a human being, would be a sympathetic, would be a tolerant patient. If it was a human being, that would be an empathetic human being. And we become empathetic, we become sympathetic, we become patient and tolerant. That's yud gimel midos. Next point, we're going to skip number 2 for now, we'll come back to it. We call Rosh Hashanah Yom Teruah. Okay? Yom Teruah. What exactly does that mean, the day of Teruah? What is Teruah? Question number 1. Question number 2, I want to ask you a following question. Let's assume right now we're going to shul on Pesach. In the middle of Chazaras Hashatz, we're all going to pull out a matzah and start eating. I was a rabbi in shul. I would throw you out of shul. That's a disrespect. You don't eat in the shul. You don't eat in the middle of a conversation with the Almighty. You're having a rendezvous with the Almighty, and you're pulling out and you're chewing on a matzah. What, would you like some cream cheese in that? Come on, what is that? A chutzpah. On Purim, in the middle of Chazaras Hashatz, we're going to read the Megillah? Absolutely not. What are you doing on Rosh Hashanah? You're pulling out your ram's horn and blowing? You're tooting away? What is that? Second question. Third question. We understand why we blow 30 kolos. That's the Gemara, Rebbe Abo of Caesarea, Kesari. According to Rav Haigon, the Ran quotes Rav Haigon, there were 3 different minhagim as to what a teruah is. See, a tekiah we all know is objective. You can't fudge a tekiah. You don't have input on a tekiah. Tekiah is something which is objective. It's one consistent note for a certain amount of time, 9 beats, that does not oscillate. If there's any oscillation, it's pusle. But by a teruah, according to Rav Haigon, it could be what we call shvarim. Ganuche ganach, the Gemara says. What's ganuche ganach? What's the shvarim? It's the way an adult would moan. Ooh. Ooh, ooh, it's a moaning, a groaning. Teruah, according to Rav Haigon, another minhag was what you and I call teruah. Not the shvarim, but the teruah. The way a baby would cry, a little child would cry. No holding back, not an adult who's moaning or groaning, not holding back, just crying. What's a third possibility, according to the way Rav Haigon understood this Gemara? Shvarim teruah. It's the process of breaking down. You start moaning and groaning the way an adult would, and then you just totally break down and cry like a child. You see someone, if a sick loved one or someone dies or something tragic happens, So according to the way Rav Haigon understood the Gemara, there's no such thing as an objective teruah. It's not like a tekiah. All of those minhagim were acceptable. They're all legitimate. They're different ways of crying. And what he did was he unified the three minhagim. He unified them. So instead of doing teisha kolos, which is the halacha according to the Torah, three sets of tekiah, teruah, tekiah. 3 times 3 is 9. Or if it's a shvarim teruah, 3 times 4 is 12. He unified it. Tekiah teruah tekiah 3 times, tekiah shvarim tekiah 3 times, and tekiah shvarim teruah tekiah 3 times. 9 plus 9 plus 12 is 30. And because people couldn't stay in shul so long, or sometimes they would have to go home, so we had tekiahs originally, before we actually got to Musaf, and then a set during Musaf, so you get 60. That we understand. We understand 30, we understand 60. But how many tekiahs, and it's an old minhag. The Aruch quotes it, the other Rishonim quote it, so it's pre-medieval times, this minhag. How many do you and I listen to? How many kolos? It's not 30 and not 60. What do we hear? 100? Where does that come from? Mea kolos. Mea kolos. So you know what they quote? The Rishonim quote this. The Aruch quotes this. You want to hear a source for this? It was the mea peot. It was the 100 acts of moaning that the mother of Sisera did when her son didn't come home. Do you know who the mother of Sisera is? That would be the equivalent of saying, we on Rosh Hashanah, Yomim Noraim, who's our role model? Who's our teacher? Osama bin Laden's mother. Osama bin Laden's mother. That's right. And she was proud of her boy. Kill those Jews. Kill those infidels. She's our role model. What in the world is Osama bin Laden's mother, Aim Sisera, doing is our teacher? Is our role model on Rosh Hashanah of all days? By the way, there's no debate on this. Mea kolos comes from Aim Sisera. Granted, it's a minug. It's not something that was legislated. You couldn't have found a little better role model? I mean, come on. Just a technical question I want to ask. Those of you who have learned Shoftim, it's Perek Dalet, Perek Hei. We read it every year in Bishalach. It's the Haftorah, the story of Devorah in Yael and Barak. Every woman and every man in that story, in that event in Jewish history, everybody's got a name. Yael and Devorah and Barak and Sisera and Yavin. Everybody gets a name. There's one person there that we're not told their name. You know who that is? Aim Sisera. Why? You can't tell us? You tell us everybody else's name. You can't tell us her name? Why is she called Sisera's mother, Sisera's mom? What is that? So it all goes back to our question. What do we mean by Yom Teruah? See, tekiah, go back to tekiah. The halacha is has to be one consistent note. No oscillation. And look at when the tekiah was blown. If you go to Parshas Baloscha, when we're told the mitzvah, tekiah can be blown by itself. That's the intellect. You know what tekiah is? We're going to call the members of the Sanhedrin. Parshas Baloscha, we're going to call the members of the Sanhedrin for learning, for a halachic discussion. We're going to call the whole tzibur together for a shir. Moshe is going to give a shir. Okay? What's teruah? If there's a time of war, if there's a famine, if we have to move, we have to get up and go. It's a time of fear, time of trepidation, time of uncertainty. Teruah is a cry. Ganuche ganach means a moan. Yalule yalal means crying. It's not the intellect. It's not chachma. It's not consistent and clear. You cry differently than I cry. It's the day that the Jewish people cry out to God. Why are we crying? Because I'm sorry, it sounds like a Schwarzenegger movie here. Because it's Judgment Day. Judgment Day. No one wants to stand before God in judgment. We quote in Neseres Yemei Tshuva, you're familiar with this, Mi Yitzdak Lifanecha. Who could ever be acquitted before you? Who could ever stand before God in judgment and be acquitted? Mi Yitzdak Lifanecha. And we're scared. because we've let God, the Almighty, down. We've let our loved ones down. We've let our people down. We've let ourselves down. It's a cry. You know, the Rav quoted, there was a famous Lutheran theologian, a German Lutheran theologian, who was an anti-Semite, a verbrente anti-Semite. His name was Rudolf Otto. And Rudolf Otto wrote a work, a theological work, called The Ideas of the Holy. You know what he writes there? And why am I quoting you Rudolf Otto? Because if you know who he was and where he was coming from, it's a heck of a compliment. You know what he says? The most beautiful and sublime prayer he's ever seen in his life is the Musaf Rosh Hashanah. This is coming from an anti-Semite. The most beautiful and sublime prayer he's ever seen in his life is the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. What happens? After we articulate ideas, abstract, difficult ideas. Let's not kid ourselves. The themes of Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, the nuance and the subtlety between the psukim, the ideas, the piyutim that we add, they're not simple. Unasana Tokef is very straightforward. People cry during Unasana Tokef because they get it. But the rest of it is not so simple. It's a very difficult tefillah, Musaf Rosh Hashanah. So here we've articulated these beautiful, sublime, these majestic, subtle ideas, reflect the grandeur, the majesty of, you know, the sophistication of the human being. And what do we do after Malchios? And what do we do after Zichronos? And what do we do after Shofros? You know what we do? We break down and cry. Because with all of our sophistication and all of our nuance and grandeur, what happens afterwards? Then it's not the prayer of the mind and the prayer of the sophistication. It's the prayer of the heart. It's the prayer of a broken person who, after we've said it all, we realize we cannot communicate in words what's really happening. The most sincere, open, honest, we stand before God and just cry. That's Yom Teruah. What's the story of Aim Sisra? You know what the story is? And it's the story of the shofar. A little geography for a second. She's in Chatzor. Many of you have been to Chatzor. By the way, I would call them, some of them are anti-Semitic, some of them are Jewish anti-Semites. These archaeologists who want to claim there was never a Jews who left Egypt, there was never an Exodus, there was never a time of Joshua, the Jews never came into the land of Israel, the whole thing is hocus pocus. They've archaeologically in the last 30, 40 years, thank God to the miracle that we can go back to our homeland, and we've got three proofs of Yehoshua ben Nun, archaeological proofs. Three of them. One of the three is Chatzor, because if you look in Sefer Yehoshua, it was a very difficult fortified city. You know how they were able to conquer it? They burnt the city down. That wasn't true of most of the conquests by Yehoshua ben Nun. They burnt down Chatzor. Guess what? They checked via carbon dating. They carbon dated the wood they discovered at the Chatzor archaeological site, and it goes back to historically the time we believe Yehoshua lived. You know what the other one is? Har Eval. Har Eval and Har Gerizim is the famous covenant. Adam Zartal was not at all an observant background. He was an archaeologist from Haifa University. Adam Zartal, he discovered the Mizbeach there at Har Eval. And they found the bones of three species of animals, the three species we bring as korbanos, the goat, the lamb, the bovine species, you know, cow species. And the third, just parenthetically, was just discovered 3 years ago, Sha'arayim. There was one community that the Canaanites had that had double gates. There was a huge fortified gate wall around the city, you know, walls with gates. This had two layers of walls with gates. That's why they called Sha'arayim in Hebrew, right? Double gates. They discovered Sha'arayim, I think three and a half years ago. So these are all three modern archaeological proofs. Not that we need it from an Emunah point of view, but to respond to the heretics of Yehoshua ben Nun. So anyways, what happened in Chatzor? Yehoshua conquers it. I'll use an analogy. Days 3 and 4 of the Six-Day War, what happened? Judea and Samaria became ours. They begged the Jordanians, Levi Eshkol called up King Hussein and begged him not to attack. Hussein felt that, you know, he believed Nasser, that instead of the Egyptian Air Force having been demolished and destroyed, that it was just a matter of time that they would be on the footsteps of Jerusalem. They conquered, you know, they came through the Negev. And he believed Nasser. And he said, if you don't attack, you're going to pay for this. We need you coming from the west. And what happened? He attacked. You know, it's to the south of the city. Now they go on the segways. They have that whole thing up on that, overlooking, many times people go there to Tel Kriya, overlooking the old city. It'll come to me. What? Tayelet. Yeah, the Tayelet. That's where he attacked from. That's where, like, the UN official was. That's where the attack was, that part of Yerushalayim. So what happened? The miracle of what happened. And days 3 and 4, not only did we conquer Yerushalayim, we conquered the whole West Bank of the Jordan River. How come today it's in the hands of the Palestinians? Because Nebuch, we didn't settle. I'm talking about us, diaspora Jewry. If you would have plopped 70, 80,000 Jews there, not millions, 70, 80,000 Jews in the next 4 or 5 years between 67 and 72, be Jewish. But nature abhors a vacuum. The Arabs live there. The Arabs have children and grandchildren, and they populate it. And they're the major population there. It's exactly what happened with Hazor. We conquered Hazor under Yehoshua, but we didn't settle it. We didn't develop it. So what happened? The Canaanim form, they regroup, and they take control of that. Yavin is the melech, Sisra is the general, and they control the northern Galilee. And what happened? Under Devorah, Barak gets a group of people, 10,000 people from Shevet Naphtali, and they go to Har Tavor. Where's Har Tavor? If you were to drive it by car, Har Tavor is the lower Galilee. It's the one great landmark. You've got on one hand the Carmel, on the other hand the Kinneret, and then this beautiful, known as the Emek Yisrael, the Jezreel Valley, one of the most fertile areas in all of Israel. And there's one huge landmark in this beautiful valley. It's called Har Tavor. You can see it from kilometers on every direction, completely symmetric mountain. How far is it to drive from Har Tavor to Hazor? An hour and a half? An hour and 15 minutes? And if you did it on horseback or camelback, if you did it on donkey back, if you did it by foot, what would it take you? 8 hours? It's not very far from Hazor in the northern Galilee to Har Tavor in the southern Galilee, correct? Sisera has never lost a battle. Okay? He's batting 1,000. You make it into the All-Star game if you bat 320. He's batting 1,000. Wasn't an option for him to lose. They didn't allow the Jews to bear arms. And the impossible happened. The unthinkable happened. She can't figure why her baby hasn't come back. The 6-hour trip or the 5-hour trip, it was days ago, this battle. Where is he? He's a monster, okay? But to her, that's her boy. She's his mommy. Mrs. Slomovitz, your son, the great Rosh Yeshiva, he's your baby. He's your boy. Right? To you, it's your boy. It's your baby. That's the young man you nursed, you cuddled. So what does she do? And why did I say she was Osama bin Laden's mother? Because the psukim tell me that. Ah, she's got this, she knows there's something wrong, but she squelches it. She denies it. They must be loading up the animals with spoils. Oh, the rikma, the shevet zvaim, it's going to be beautiful. Those Jews, those rich Jews, they must have their women dress. I can't wait to what he's going to bring back home. And then she says, racham racham atayim. One womb, multiple wombs, which is a euphemistic way of saying something much more inappropriate. You know why they're so late? They're raping the Jewish girls. Oh, they must be having the time of their life with those little Jew girls. Oh, that must be the reason he's delayed. And another day goes by. And another day goes by. And a third day goes by. And he's not coming home. And there's something very wrong. And then it says her peers came, the other women of the aristocracy, and they're making all kinds of excuses. And another day goes by. And another day goes by. Until finally she breaks down. Until finally she realizes, my baby, my boy is never coming back. It was a process. You know what the show, you know what mea culpa is supposed to remind us of? That process. Not her, that process. We know there's something wrong. The way we speak about each other, or to each other, we know there's a little, it's called our conscience, there's a gnawing feeling within us that's not right. You know what we do? We squelch it. No, they deserved it. No, it's true. It's really true. You know what? No, I have to do this because I've got to set everybody straight. You know, so we make a rationalization and we make a justification. But you know what happens? What's mea culpa? That sound of the shofar. Boom. Boom. You know, the Rambam says in Perek Gimel Halacha Dalet of Hilchos Tshuva, what's the remez, what's the illusion of the shofar? It's a wake-up call. It's that wake-up call. Uru yishenim mishenaschem. Wake up those who are sleeping. You know, we sleep through life. It's a wake-up call. But no, we squelch it. Put a blanket, a pillow over it. Rings again. Boom. No, we explain it away. Slowly but surely there's a process. And that voice within us, symbolized by the shofar, it keeps coming back. A new justification, a new defense, a new rationalization. Finally, it breaks us down, like Aim Sisra. After a number of days, there were no more excuses. There were no more possible explanations. She broke down when that original realization, that original what she, that voice within, she stopped squelching it. She stopped suppressing it. She stopped denying it. And that's when she broke down. That's the process of mea culpa. That's the minhag that we have. That's the process of tshuva. Most of us don't turn on a dime. Most of us don't change overnight. It's a process. And the symbol of that process is the shofar, the mea culpa. Something we've mentioned before, I'm skipping to number 7 right now, is in the shofaros. What is shofar, by the way? Shofar in the shofaros section, it's not the Chidon HaTanach. Find me 10 psukim in the Tanakh that the word shofar is used. No, what is the idea of a shofar? Shofar is always an association. I'll give you an example. What do you think of when you see this? Okay. Nike. Right, the check, right? The Nike, it's actually the pagan god they used to relate to. Or we've all seen, whether it's certain symbols, we associate certain things with those symbols, right? What's a flag? Association, a symbol of America. There's always a symbol or an association with Gilui Shechina. When you and I, human beings, when we encounter God, Gilui Shechina means the perceived presence of God. When we encounter the Ribbono Shel Olam, when it's apparent and obvious to us. So there was a shofar at Har Sinai. That's the first 3 psukim from the Chumash. Why was the shofar blown at Har Sinai? Because the shofar is a harbinger of what? That we're going to perceive God, not just through Moshe Rabbeinu's teachings, not just through Miriam's teaching, but God is going to speak directly to us. We're going to perceive. It's going to be obvious. What's the next 3 psukim from Sefer Tehillim? The shofar of the Beis HaMikdash. What was the Beis HaMikdash? That was the place of Hashraz Hashchina, where you perceived God. Defied the laws of physics, right? We were cramped when we were standing, right? What's the phrase? Omdim tzufufim in Pirkei Avos, mishtachavim revachim. A lot of space. It's a defiance of the law of physics. We're just crowded. Now when we're confessing, when we're prostrating, no one can hear us. There's space. What was in the Beis HaMikdash? The Sanhedrin, the Kohanim. It was a place of education. It was a place of learning. It was a place where you could perceive the knowledge of God. Whereas a Jew, Judaism became so meaningful, so obvious because of the education that took place there, because of the encounter with the great pious members of the Sanhedrin. The shofar is associated with that place. What are the three psukim that are quoted from the Nevi'im about the concept of Gilui Shechina in the future? So there's a famous pasuk that the Machzor quotes from Yeshaya HaNavi. What does it say? Yeshaya says, Teka b'shofar gadol l'cheruseinu. Blow the big shofar for our freedom, meaning for the emancipation from Shibud Malchuyos, for the emancipation from all the oppression that exists in this world. When the Jewish people, when there's an ingathering of the exiles for the Messianic era, blow the big shofar. Can I ask you a question? What's the big shofar? Medrash is bothered. What's the big shofar? So Medrash, you have to, a little bit of zoology. With a ram and Ayel, they do not have symmetrical horns. There's a horn on each side, but they're asymmetric. By definition, one is going to be larger, one's going to be smaller. You know what the Medrash says? The Ayel, the ram that was Ne'achaz B'Svach, the ram that was caught up in the thicket, that replaced, that was Tachas Yitzchak, that ram had two horns. The smaller of those horns was blown at Har Sinai, the Medrash says. The larger of the horns will be blown in the Yemos HaMashiach. What does that mean? I don't think the Medrash is meant to be taken literally. I don't think we've been able to save the horn from the ram of Isaac. What's the idea there? The smaller horn means this, that at Har Sinai, the Jewish people encountered the Ribono Sholom. At Har Sinai, what happened? We had that rendezvous. We perceived the knowledge of God. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, lo yielecha Elohim acherim. It was something that was clear, it was obvious to us, but not all of humanity. Ultimately, what will happen ultimately, and what do we pray for, and what do we strive and dedicate our lives to? That all of humanity will perceive the Almighty. Teka b'shofar gadol, not just a small shofar, the large shofar, when all of humanity adopts the Ribono Shel Olam. What does it mean when we say, during this time of year, Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Meisim Psuchim Lefanecha? The books of life and the books of death are open before you. Or the books of the living and the books of the dead are open before you. So I'll tell you what the Rav said. It's based on Gemaras and other. But before we say what the Rav said, here's the question we ask. Last year, Rabbi Yashiv Zatzal, Rabbi Finkel, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Mir Zatzal, Rabbi Scheinberg from Torah Or, they're all Nifter this past year. Ahmadinejad is very healthy. He's stark, gesund. The Ayatollah Khomeini is very healthy. He's also stark. Cesar Chavez is not healthy. He's got cancer. But he's still alive. Are we going to say that, God forbid, Rabbi Nosson C. Finkel, the Mir Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal, Rabbi Yashiv, Rabbi Scheinberg, so they were judged as being wicked, and that's why they died this year, because they were inscribed in the Book of Death. But Ahmadinejad and the Ayatollah and Chavez, they were inscribed in the Book of Life. They were righteous. God forbid. What does it mean, the Sifrei Chaim and the Sifrei Meisim? What does it mean when the books of Chaim and the books of Meisim? The Rav said the following. The way to understand that principle starts in the Gemara. It's used in our liturgy. The Piyutim use that Gemara. You know what it is? The living and the dead are both judged. We're not the only ones being judged, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. What does he mean? What does that mean that the Meisim are judged? Very simply. Imagine, how many of you have gone to a wedding, which was a long wedding, and you just said, oh, I wish I was home. You know, I wish you're doing anything. I don't know that many people here, and I can't get a ride back to this and that. You know, you're plotzing. And there's always somebody at the wedding, you know, that makes it interesting, right? There's always one guy at the table, he's the guy telling the dirty jokes, or he's the guy telling about how he swindled and cheated this one. And he's the life of the party. Imagine this. You were this person. And long after you died, you have a Masorah, because you taught other people how to tell a good filthy joke, or you taught other people how to machadre and do a swindle, and they learned from you because you were the life of the party, you were dynamic. Even though you're dead, you're still being judged, because every time somebody says something inappropriate, every time somebody cheats something, and who was their Rebbe? You were. Long after you died on this earth, that book is still open. And pum fakert. What happens if in your lifetime people learned from you? They learned how to give. They learned how to treat a stranger. They learned, you know, sensitivities of how to cheer someone up when they were really depressed and hurting. You taught them the derech of how to make someone feel like a mensch. How to really show that you care and not just, oh, yeah, I feel bad for you and move on to the next one. Because you were good, you were a sensitive soul. And you were their Rebbe. The Rebbe in Derech Eretz, the Rebbe in Bikur Cholim, the Rebbe in Chesed. You're dead. You've been dead 20 years. But you want to know something? Your Talmidim are still alive, and they're producing other Talmidim. And there's a whole flock of people out there that really know how to be a mensch, and they really know how to do Chesed, because you were the living Rebbe, the living embodiment of what it meant to be a Baal Chesed. You're long dead, and your book is open, and you're being judged, litov, for that. The Rav said, pshat in the Gemara, Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Meisim, it's not only those of us who are living that are being judged. We all leave peros. We all plant seeds. Our actions, our speech, our deeds, they plant seeds that grow into huge cedars of Lebanon, that grow into huge cedars that you'll see in the northern hills of California. And we're being judged, Latov and Lara, for that. That's Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Meisim, Psuchim Lefanecha. Let's mention something that's associated with Yom Kippur. We have a real, there's a term, you know, it's a dirty word for a Jew to say such a word. It's called a scapegoat. You know what a scapegoat is, right? You know why it's a dirty word? You shouldn't say that? Because the source, the root of that word is anti-Semitic. Meaning what? Look at these Jews. They're corrupt all year. They're manipulators, they're swindlers. And you know what happens? They have their high priest who's living off the public dole. He comes and he makes a confession, like hocus pocus, right? He's going to make a confession on his goat. And Nebuch, the poor goat, they're going to take out near Maale Adumim, throw that goat off a cliff, and everyone's forgiven, everybody's innocent, everybody's inscribed in the book of life. Scapegoat. The goat's taking the hit for the Jews. What kind of, and they call us pagans? And they call us Ovdei Avodah Zarah? Let them look at their own book for a second. Let them look at themselves in the mirror, those Jews. You hear the question? By the way, this was something that was always a call of the Christians against the Jews. There's a reason we abrogated the covenant, because we don't do hideous things like that. We don't absolve ourselves through a goat and through a once-a-year confession. Hold that question. Let me ask you something else. You're familiar with the Mishnayos from Masechta Yuma. Can I ask you something? Just a review. We have to acquire two goats. They have to look the same. If this goat is white, they both have to be white. If this goat is this tall, both goats got to be the same height. Same weight, roughly. Roughly the same weight. They have to look the same. Same value. You can't spend X on one goat and Y on another. You pay the same price, which is reflective of that they're similar. Why do you have to have all these halachas that the two goats have to be similar? And let me ask you something else. What determines which goat goes into the Holy of Holies, the Sanctum Sanctorum, in Hebrew, the Kodesh Kadoshim, and which goat gets taken east past Male Dumiman and gets thrown off a cliff. The same goats, same value, same weight, same height, same look. What determines that? What we call the goral, hagrala, the goral. So it's a lottery. It's fate. You know, luck of the draw. Which hand did Lashem, that lot, come up in? And which hand did La'azazel, the cliff that it's going off, have come up in? That's very strange. You'd think, you know, to go into the Holy of Holies, a little preparation maybe, you know what I mean? No, it's a lottery. It's the luck of the draw, the goral. What is that? Just parenthetically, there's nothing to do with this. They've actually, we know today the mountain that the goat was thrown off of. It's amazing. It's just, we live in such a time that we can go back to our homeland. You know how they know? Very simple. Those mountains in the Judean hills, what are those mountains all made of? Limestone. You know the Jerusalem stone that you used to? Limestone. There's one mountain in the Judean hills that's flintstone. Not Fred Flintstone, like Tzur, Tzadi, Vav Resh. It's so much harder. It's so much rougher and so much stronger in terms of its texture than a limestone. That was the mountain. It's the one mountain in that whole area that's not made of limestone. It's a flintstone mountain. It has nothing to do with anything. Let's go back. No, it does, because the Mishnah it does have something to do with something. The Mishnah says that the goat was dead long before it ever hit the ground. It was ripped apart because of the contour of the mountain. That's the flintstone mountain. So how did the Rav wrestled with these issues? If you have the Sefer Ala Tshuva, or in English, on repentance, Pinchas Peli wrote up a whole Yortzeit drasha on this. So some of it's going to come from that, and I apologize, a Tshuva drasha. Some of it's going to come from Pinchas Peli Sefer Ala Tshuva, and the other point is going to come from a lecture he gave at the Maimonides School. Just parenthetically, the Rav used to say, he was the most nervous Motzei Shabbos, after Shabbos, for the shiur he would give. And they said to him, you know, you're giving a shiur to these superstar, brilliant Talmidei Chachamim Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Motzei Shabbos, it's a shiur, but it's a Chumash shiur, it's a little bit lighter, it's not as heavy, it's not a deep Gemara shiur. You know, you've got people from the community, you got the students from Harvard, from Tufts, from MIT. He says, don't you understand? He says, Saturday night, I'm competing with the movies. After a long Shabbos, he says, where do you think they want to go? To the ice cream, to the movies. He says, I'm not just giving a shiur, I have to be an entertainer on Motzei Shabbos. And for years, literally hundreds of people would pack the auditorium at the Maimonides Yeshiva, the Maimonides School in Boston. And he would give a shiur. I have those tapes, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 15 minutes. So one of them I heard on a Motzei Shabbos shiur. Said the following. Go back to the halacha. The same value, the same look, the same height, the same weight. What's the goat symbolic of? Us. You know, the goat is the rebellious. When you talk about an animal that's a rebellious animal, you know, Billy the Kid. They didn't call him Billy the cow, and they didn't call him Billy the lamb, and they didn't call him Billy the horse. They called him Billy the Kid. There's a reason for that. I'm a farm boy. I can testify to that. What happens? God invested in us not just an IQ, but assets as a function of whatever wealth we have, talents as a function of our parents, our community, our friends, abilities. We were given a whole year. There's a lot of seconds, a lot of minutes, hours, days, months in a year. And what did we do? We could have consecrated that. We could have been makdish it, bring it into the Holy of Holies by being the Almighty's partner. Whether it's whatever we could use our talents for Jewish education, for making the community a warmer community, for making the lives of people different. We could have consecrated and dedicated those talents, bring them into the Kodesh Kedoshim. You know what we did? The time we wasted, the money we wasted, The gift of speech that we were very vile with and wasted and said Lashon Hara and other things. We took it and threw it off a cliff. We trashed it. Because the question that's also asked about Sa'ir La'Azazel, You know what the other question is asked? How you can only take a korban and bring it where? Into the mikdash. You don't take a korban outside the mikdash. What are you doing? And by the way, it's worse. I left this question out. The vidui on the sins of tumas mikdash v'kadasha, you know, due to negligence, there was tumah in the base of mikdash. That's done on the bull. But the sins of guns, klal Yisrael, of the whole Jewish people, where are those sins confessed over? The sa'ir lazazel. What do you do? Why is the key confession, the key vidui, the mechaper for the sins of klal Yisrael, is a goat that's not even going into the mikdash? That's the whole point. We could have used same weight, same height, same value, same look. We could have used those talents and those abilities. We trashed them. We threw them off a cliff. We wasted it. And sometimes we did worse than waste it. We corrupted it. And you know what the Rav said? What's the point? Part of the great chesed of Yom Kippur is when we look at ourselves, we look back at how we used a speech or how we used our time, how we used our relationships. You know, we each have relationships with special people. How do we use them? How do we treat them? If you pained over that, you feel terrible that it was just wasted. It could have been brought as a korban. It could have been used to come close to God. Korban means karov, right? The shorish is karov. You could have used that to come close to God. And instead, you wasted it. You destroyed it. The frustration, the hurt, the pain over that, that too is a mechaper. That's the chesed of God. That if a person really feels that, you know, we've abused and we've wasted our potential, the whole point of Sa'ir Lazazel is teaching us that that is a mechaper. That atones as well. That's why that's the mechaper for the sins of the Jewish people. And that's why it's the same weight, same size, same value. And that's why it goes off the cliff and not into the Kodesh Kadoshim. And the point of the Goral, which we haven't explained, he wanted to explain like this. I'm going to use an analogy that we're familiar with. Think about these kids that we have in the JSU clubs. Throughout the length and breadth of North America, you'll ask, how come those kids don't keep Shabbos? How come they don't put on tefillin? How come they don't give Meiser Ksafim 10% of the... They don't even know what the word Meiser Ksafim means. What are tefillin? You gave them two flashcards, one with an aleph and one with a beis on it. They can't tell. They can't read the aleph. Forget that they don't can't read Hebrew. They don't know what an aleph and a beis is. What's the limud zchus on that? They weren't born into a community. They weren't born into a family. They weren't given a Jewish education. They're not going to be judged the same way you and I are going to be judged. They weren't afforded the opportunities, the experiences, the education that we have been given. What's that a function of? Goral. That's a function of where they were born, who they were born into. Use that analogy. What's our defense before the Ribono Shel Olam, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? We said, Mi Yitzdak Lefanecha. Who could ever be acquitted? Who could stand before God and said, I've lived up to my potential. I've been your partner. I've done it right. The assets, the time, the abilities, the talents, I've used them really well, God, this year. No one could say such a thing. No one could make such a claim. Mi Yitzdak Lefanecha. So what defense do we have? Using that as an analogy, Goral. Hashem, you know, if only I was the shamash of Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach and I lived by him day and night, you know, maybe I'd be a more sensitive soul. Maybe I'd treat my wife a little better. Maybe I'd be a better father. Maybe I would relate to my fellow employees a little better. But, you know, I'm in the rat race. Whether it's coming on the subway or driving, you know, by the time I get here, I'm an ois mensch, you know, I'm just tight, you know, my neck is tight and I'm ready to kill because I've been cut off in traffic three times or been blocked out of the sun. It's my goal rail. we know it's not a very strong defense. We know it's not a very good defense. But if the lottery had fallen Lashem, we wouldn't have been thrown off the cliff. We would have been brought into the Holy of Holies. Gorel. That's the lesson of that idea. And where we're going to end is the following idea. And it's not a simple idea. We're going to mention the Akedah for the next few minutes. That's going to be our last point. I apologize we didn't get to Chana or to Zechariah, but we're going to mention the Akedah. A couple of basic questions. When these animals send their children strapped with belts, you know, and blow their children up, we call them barbarians, animals. They pervert religion. Avram was ready to slaughter his own son. That's infanticide. In the name of God, he was ready to kill his own child. But he, on Rosh Hashanah, is our poster child. He's our role model. What's the difference? If you learn like Rashi that Yitzchak wasn't a na'ar, to quote Joe Pesci, the Utes, right? He wasn't a na'ar. He was a na'ar and conveys certain ideas, but in age he was 37 years old, Rashi says, if you do the math. Do the math. He was 37 years old. The fact that he was a willing accomplice to put his neck under a knife and have his throat slit, that in English is called suicide. I thought we abhor suicide. Third question. And by the way, we're not the only ones who look at the Akedah. We look up to the Akedah. You know Søren Kierkegaard, the famous Danish theologian? See, Batman is the Black Knight. According to the Kierkegaard, we have our own knight. It's not the Black Knight. It's called the Knight of Faith. Avram is the Knight of Faith. And the Akedah is the great leap of faith. Can I ask you something? What was the Ribbono Shel Olam doing? He sends him to slaughter his son. He didn't say slaughter, he said bring him up as an olah, but it's very clear that what Avram understood was sacrifice your son. Then Hashem says, no, don't do it. Not don't do it, al taslo ma'uma, don't even touch him, nothing. If God doesn't want Avram to sacrifice Yitzchak, if God does not want Avram to commit this murder, then why does he command him to do it? What's going on here? Was he playing? Was he toying with Avraham? How do we understand the Akedah? What is the Akedah teaching us? It's a tough question. I made a mistake in the assumption of the question. That's why when a question is wrong or is answered, it's because there's a false assumption in that question. I want to tell you this. In theory, what the Akedah teaches us is that we subscribe to sacrificing our life to God. It's a value, mesiras nefesh. But in practice, we don't subscribe to murder. Meaning what? Avraham is the ideal. This is not Avraham's child. That child is on loan from the Almighty. What did Chana say? What does Chana teach us? Many things on Rosh Hashanah. But when she names her child, Ki Me Hashem She'iltiv, he's borrowed from God. It's not my child. It's God's child. It's not my body. That's why as Jews, we can't gouge ourselves. We can't do tattoos. We can't treat our body in a reckless way. It's not my time. What does Shabbos and Yom Tov and many other mitzvahs teach us? The time doesn't belong to me. It's on loan from God. It's not my assets. There's a reason. God has conditions on this portfolio that he's asked me to manage. And there are conditions. Truma to the Kohen and Maaser Rishon to the Levi and Maaser Ksafim. Not my body, not my assets, not my time. It's not my IQ. I didn't build up this IQ. It was given to me. What's the point? What's the point of the Akedah? The point of the Akedah is the following. What Avram was teaching us and what Yitzchak was teaching us, if he was 37 years old, what he was teaching us is that a Jew leads a sacrificial life. We commit what we call Mesiras Nefesh. We commit our time because it's not our time. We commit the time that God has lent us, the talents that God has lent us, the IQ that God has lent us, the body, the assets, we commit it to a godly lifestyle. So yes, in theory, we believe in a sacrificial life. He is the role model. In practice, with rare exception, a rare exception would be in 1096, when they had the option of baptism, which means rejecting the very basic truths of this universe, that we don't do that. We give our lives. That was the story of the First Crusade of the German Rhineland. There are very rare exceptions. Someone puts a gun to your head and says, kill or I'll kill you. We don't take another human being's life. The Gemara says, who says that my blood is redder than his blood? With very rare exceptions where we actually do give our lives. But you want to know something? We do give our lives. Not through death, through living. That's the lesson of the Akedah. Everything is committed. Everything is dedicated to God because it belongs to God. L'Adoshem ha'aretz umloa, we're going to say in Malchios. It is all consecrated to the Almighty. It's not Sheli. L'Adoshem, not just that it belongs to God. It's consecrated. It's dedicated to God. And that means our time, our talents, our ability, our assets. That's the point of the Akedah. Because Avraham demonstrated that principle in a way that was very real. The most precious thing he had is child. Child, and he acknowledged it's not my child, it's God's child, and that child is only on loan to me. That's the idea of the Akedah, and it's the point that we look up to them, that a Jew, by definition, that we commit ourselves on Rosh Hashanah, when we look up to our role models, we lead a committed life, we lead a dedicated life, and that we consecrate and we acknowledge that it's not mine, not my talents, my abilities, my money. It's God's, and it's consecrated to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the lesson of the Akedah that God was teaching them. And that's why we hold them up as role models. The Knight of Faith, as he's so called. I want to wish everyone a very, very meaningful year. That the Yud Gimel Midas Harachimim are not some incantation we say, but that we internalize them. Ya'asu lefanai. That the process of mea kolos and yom teruah, that, so to speak, we break down the defenses, we break down the excuses and justifications, and we become different people. And it truly is a yom teruah. And that ultimately this be the year when that shofar gadol, the great, the large shofar, will be blown, that all of humanity comes to the perception and to the realization of the truth and leads a true life. And that all of us, both the Chaim and the Mason, will be judged, Litov, and that ultimately we can dedicate our lives as Avram and Yitzchak. We can consecrate our lives to being God's partners and to making this a perfect world. Thank you, and Aksiva v'chasima tova.